The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you can be with us on a beautiful Thursday afternoon. Going to be 95 degrees this weekend. I love this. Love that we finally got some summertime after such a gray start to things. Coming up today at 12:30, Dinesh D'Souza will join us. He has a new book out that is very relevant to what's going on here in Western Washington, The Rise of Socialism in America. So we will talk with Dinesh D'Souza about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. We got a very big show for you today. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
So the big question has been, what's next? Now that the Marxists have successfully taken over much of Seattle government, they have forced out a black police chief, a black female police chief. They have very successfully imposed the biggest business tax in our city's history, which is going to continue to prove disastrous as our economy tries to recover from all of this. We've had people beaten outside of their homes. We've had people terrorized inside of their homes. If you were listening last week, I talked to a guy who lives up on Queen Anne in Seattle. Nice residential neighborhood. And he told us about how the mob came outside of his house at midnight, one night a couple of weeks ago. And he went out just to record video because he doesn't see mobs massing in this Queen Anne neighborhood very often. They saw him with his phone out and they brutally beat this man. They gave him a concussion, left him bleeding in the street. His relatives had to rush him to the hospital. And the message, the reason he reached out to me and said he wanted to come on the show was because he said that it's imperative that people know this isn't just a little radical six-block enclave on Queen Anne. That this is, or I mean, on Capitol Hill, I should say. That it's coming to every residential neighborhood, and it's spreading throughout the region. It's going to happen in, well, it did happen in Snohomish County when they tried to terrorize Carmen Best's family outside of her Snohomish family home, but some armed neighbors protected Carmen Best's home and their neighborhood. But it is surely spreading throughout the region. And so what is next? And I asked a question a couple of days ago, and I got a few responses, but I didn't get in depth into this. But I wanted to dive into it a little bit more in depth today because of some additional facts I have to share with you. If you live in the suburbs or even in a rural area here in Western Washington, what is it like to feel like you are completely cut off from your government? Because what we are seeing is a bunch of radical Seattle politicians are setting the tone for the entire region. And I'm not just talking about the Seattle City Council. I'm talking about the King County Council, which also has an awful lot of radical politicians. King County is gigantic. You know, if you ever drive along Highway 2, you leave King County and go into Snohomish County for a ways, and then after several miles, you're back in King County, stretching up into the Cascades. King County's gigantic. And it's pretty tough for somebody who lives in Skykomish or Duval, or in rural parts of Snohomish and Pierce, Whatcom, Kitsap. You know, I mentioned I was over on the west side of the Sound last weekend. It's like a different world. People have Trump bumper stickers without fear of getting their cars keyed. They have American flags with a Trump 2020 flag right underneath. There are Lauren Culp yard signs everywhere. And yet, for all of those people in suburban and rural Western Washington, you must feel like your politics is in a completely different world, because you have Jay Inslee and an increasingly Seattle-driven state government that is doing all kinds of radical things at the state level. And then, as I said, if you're in rural parts of King County, you have just the urban Seattle King County Council making decisions. And here's the new information that I have to share with you. There is now going to be an attempt to defund, now that they've succeeded with the Seattle police, there's going to be an attempt to defund the King County Sheriff's Office. The King County Council is going to try to put a charter on the ballot in November. First of all, they want to make the sheriff an appointed position, not elected. They want to take the power away from the people to elect a sheriff. And then they will appoint somebody that the most radical Seattle King County members, council members, will be able to get to pull out their anti-gun agenda. All of the things that are happening in Seattle right now, they want to spread that throughout King County. And as I said, if you live in not just the rural areas, but in the suburbs, they're coming for you. And so they want to defund the King County Sheriff's Office. Again, if you live way out in rural King County, or Pierce County, or Snohomish County, where you're covered by the sheriff's office, there might be one deputy covering a gigantic geographic area. You cannot call 911 and expect to get a response time that is going to save your life if someone's coming after you, which is why so many people have decided to become their own first line of defense. But now there's going to be an attempt to defund the King County Sheriff's Office. And I'm no great fan of leadership. I think the detectives and deputies of the King County Sheriff are fantastic. I continue to be convinced that the King County Sheriff, who was elected, but people make mistakes all the time with elections around here, but Mitzi Jo Hanknik is not competent as King County Sheriff, and she is way over her head, and she continues to have a sheriff's office that is in shambles. But the council is going to try to take advantage of that, and they're going to try to make this a appointed position, and they're going to try to strip funding. They're going to take it away from the sheriff's office and give it to the King County Council. And again, their agenda is very clear. And anti-gun, anti-Second Amendment, is at the top of their list of things they want to go after. Now, it's interesting. So I brought this up a few days ago, and I asked listeners, and I'm going to ask you again, because I want to share your comments as we progress through the afternoon. But how frustrating is it to feel like you have no representation in your government, because everything is being driven by far-left extremists in Seattle? And again, I'm not just talking about Pierce and Snohomish counties or rural King County. You know, Whatcom, Kitsap, everywhere you can hear my voice, Skagit. I used to have a place in Central Washington. I tell you, over in Chelan and Douglas counties, it's a different world. And they feel like they have no voice in the state government anymore because of this growing majority, one-party majority, that is imposing unconstitutional laws. We're seeing it all the time. So how frustrated are you? Text me that at 98973. Another reason I bring this up is not just because the King County sheriffs are in the crosshairs of the far-left politicians that are destroying Seattle, but the president was talking about this yesterday, rather coincidentally, since I brought it up 3 days ago, unless he's listening to my show. But he was talking about how the people who are taking over the cities, they're not going to stop. They're going to come to the suburbs. They're going to bring their radicalism to the burbs, to the rural areas.
You have warned several times that if Joe Biden is elected president, that there will be an invasion in suburban neighborhoods. It's a sentiment that you selected to tweet again this morning.
Okay, that's a reporter asking the president at his press conference yesterday, because Donald Trump tweeted, if Joe Biden is elected, there will be an invasion of the suburbs. And people tried to make something out of the president's answer that is not what he was saying at all. But here's more on that.
Exactly, do you mean by invasion?
What I mean is people are going to become, they're going to be opening up areas of your neighborhood, which they're doing, and now they're going to do, they wanted to expand it, and they will expand it. If for any reason, they're going to, in my opinion, destroy suburbia. And just so you understand, 30% plus of the people living in suburbia are minorities. African American, Asian American, Hispanic American, they're minorities. 30%. The number's even higher. They say 35, but I like to cut it a little bit lower. You know why? That way I can never get myself in too much trouble with the fake news.
Okay, now this is the news. They said, oh, he says he wants to tamp down the number of minorities in the suburbs. That's not what he's saying at all. He said the suburbs aren't just white. The suburbs are at least 30% minorities. And all he was saying about tamping down the number is, he said, if I say 35%, they'll say you exaggerated. But his point is, if they come for the suburbs, which they're doing around here now, they went to a very rural area in Snohomish County to go after Carmen Best's house. Part of the reason why she was forced to resign, the mob won. They got rid of Carmen Best. They got rid of a black female, very respected police chief. But the president went on to talk about how the burbs are next in this cultural war that we're fighting right now, that, you know, Seattle's been ground zero in the country in the midst of all of this.
But 30% plus are minorities living in suburbia. And when they go in and they want to change zoning so that you have lots of problems, where they want to build low-income housing, you want something where people can aspire to be there, not something where it gets hurt badly.
Okay, I'm going to jump in on that because, again, we are seeing this here in Western Washington. And, yeah, the suburbs tend to be a lot more family-friendly than Seattle is these days for a bunch of reasons. You know, I've talked about how Seattle is the lowest percentage of children per capita of any city in the country, and Seattle is the most unchurched city in the country. And not that, you know, being of religious faith is a necessity for a great community, but as I say all the time, the two things that really are galvanizing forces in a community are schools and churches. And those are two things that Seattle's in very short supply of. And so instead of having a bonded community, we have a bunch of people who sit behind their keyboards and just, send out messages how much they hate each other. And then they go to rallies and firebomb police officers and buildings. The suburbs, people want a little more peaceful life. And what the president's saying is, no, they're coming for the burbs next. And there's absolutely no question that that is happening around here. There's no question about it. And he talks about that the suburbs tend to be something that people aspire to. There's nothing wrong with that. And you have groups, and he was talking about zoning changes. Sound Transit, They are, you know, building parking garages in what used to be more quiet suburbs. And with that, they mandate low-income housing, which, whether people want to accept it or not, brings crime with it. And so they are exporting, because of their social views, they're exporting the Seattle problems into the surrounding areas. I'm going to get into this a little more in depth as we go throughout the afternoon. I do want to sift through your text messages. What is it like to feel like you have no representation in local government? You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we'll get into this more in depth. Hang out with us throughout the afternoon. I've got a lot of really interesting stuff to share with you on this. And that is, for now, your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay. Coming up next. And I'm getting lots of good texts on this already. Keep them coming. 98973. Dinesh D'Souza. What is happening here in Western Washington is kind of a microcosm of this push throughout America. And he's got some really fascinating info to back that up. So Dinesh D'Souza will join us coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. I've been trying to think when all this cancel culture stuff started, and I don't think this was the start of it, but I remember several years ago when Lakeside High School here in Seattle invited a young conservative author to come speak at their school, and the teachers went berserk. And that's when I first became friends with Dinesh D'Souza, a brown-skinned Indian man who was deemed too conservative for Lakeside High School. And now we've seen what cancel culture has done between then and now. It's just taken off like a snowball downhill. But our old buddy Dinesh D'Souza joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Dinesh, it's good to talk to you again.
Hey, it's good to be back. Looking forward to chatting with you.
So were you on the leading edge of cancel culture?
Well, my first book, which came out in 1991, I believe, was called Illiberal Education, and it talked about the intolerance that had crept into the college campus. Now, I didn't realize at that time that the high schools were also infected, Lakeside included, but I was under the impression at that point that it was confined to the campus, that it was not going to bleed out or metastasize into the larger culture. So I think that's the big change in this past generation, is we can see the same craziness that we saw in the campus is now on the street and in the corporations and in the political bloodstream.
Well, and I have been trying to educate my listeners for years about the forces behind this. And Dinesh D'Souza has a brand new book out titled United States of Socialism. I've been talking for years, Dinesh, about this Marxist movement where, I mean, we have a council member here, Shama Sawant from your native land, who makes no bones about it. She's with a group called Socialist Alternative. They state that they are a Marxist organization. Their goal is to destroy capitalism. They want to destroy the police departments, rebuild in their image out of the rubble they've created. And this, it would seem, would be consistent with what you're talking about in your new book.
For sure. I mean, I grew up under Indian socialism. India was a socialist country from independence, 1947, until the mid-1980s. And a whole generation of Indians was sort of robbed of its birthright. In fact, Gandhi in this period would talk about wiping a tear off every Indian face. Our family had a ration card, so you could only buy so much rice and so much oil and so much sugar. So this is socialism. I mean, it's scarcity, it's misery, it's tyranny. So I find it ironic that most Indians today, by the way, are not on board with this at all. But there apparently are some who still are pushing that agenda here in America. The other point I want to make about cancel culture is the fact that a key figure, I think, in all this is a guy named Herbert Marcuse. an activist in the 1960s. He taught in California, I believe at the University of California in San Diego, a guru of the New Left. And he advanced the argument that free speech does not apply to people who are haters. In other words, he said we should be tolerant, but we should not be tolerant of the intolerant. And so right away he created a sort of a scheme in which you could classify people you don't agree with as intolerant, and then you are justified in suppressing them any which way you can, including using violence to do it. So I see Marcuse as the kind of philosopher, if you will, of Antifa, and a generation later his teachings have in a sense come to full fruition.
Yeah, full fruition because, and again, I'll reference what's happening here in Seattle. 7 of the 9 city council members, they are all, you know, anywhere from far left to Marxist, the 9 council members. 7 of the 9 voted to defund the police department by at least 50%. 2 of the 9, to their credit, said, no, that's reckless, that's dangerous, we don't have a plan. So what has happened? The what I call domestic terrorists marching in the street, they are going to those 2 council members' homes and they are terrorizing their families and their neighbors, and they are writing obscene messages on their door and on their windows. And you know, I hear so many in the media call these people protesters, but when you go to somebody's home to terrorize their family, to try to influence how they think and vote, I don't know how we can call that anything but domestic terrorism.
It is a profound attack on democracy, and it's a profound attack on civil liberties. Let's remember that our civil liberties, our basic civil rights and civil liberties that are outlined in the Bill of Rights, the right to free speech, the right to assemble, these are actually not up for democratic referendum. In other words, even 90% of people can't vote to tell me how to think or what to believe or what religion to practice. These rights were never ceded to the government in the first place. And so you begin to see how profound the violation is here. It's a violation ultimately of our basic human dignity. And it is the actual state governments don't do this. It is the direct obligation of the federal government to intervene and prevent these violations of fundamental constitutional rights.
Well, not only is government not protecting our rights, but they are fostering this behavior. I mean, the radical Marxist councilwoman, Kshama Sawant, that I mentioned, she's the one who's giving out her colleagues' home addresses to the mob. She opened with her key the door to Seattle City Hall one night a few weeks ago so hundreds of people could go in and protest at 9 o'clock at night. And I mean, she's just does what to many looks like crazy things, but she's actually just being very effective in achieving her goal of creating chaos, because she truly hopes that her Marxist dystopia can arise out of that.
Well, I mean, this is what you're describing is a scenario that really resembles, you know, Italy in the 1920s and Germany in the early 30s. In other words, you have paramilitary gangs, and these paramilitary gangs have the endorsement of the political powers that be. Of course, in the 20s, it was Mussolini. And I was struck when Maisie Hirono walked out when Ted Cruz was talking about Antifa and some of its tactics. What's telling here is that these are paramilitaries that aren't functioning on their own. They have powerful allies in the media, in academia, in Hollywood, which puts up bail money for these guys, and in the mayor's office and the council members. So what you're talking here is ultimately a politically sanctioned terror gang functioning within our democracy. Now, I have not seen this in my lifetime in America, so our politics are clearly taking a dark new turn, and I can only see this ending up with a lot of bloodshed. I mean, if we continue down this path unchecked, there's going to be a lot of problems, and I just hope we are able to curtail this before it gets out of hand.
Yeah, they tried marching on the Seattle Police Chief's house last Saturday. Armed neighbors came out in the street and repelled the domestic terrorists. And yes, this is going to amp up. It's going to end very badly. We're talking with Dinesh D'Souza. His new book is The United States of Socialism. It'll give you a great glimpse as to how we got to where we are here in our region right now. He also has a new movie coming out that I want to talk with him about. So stick around, Dinesh, and we will continue the conversation in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show continues. I am back with Dinesh D'Souza. His new book, The United States of Socialism. I also want to talk about your movie. But so on the cover of your book, Dinesh, United States of Socialism, who's behind it, why it's evil? And I know you go into it in depth, but who is behind this in your view?
Well, I think that socialism now has powerful support that goes way beyond Bernie Sanders and the so-called squad made up of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar and a few others. The most powerful socialists in the country are probably in academia, in the media, and in Hollywood. And those happen to be the three biggest megaphones of our culture. So they're able to get their message out in a huge way, and they're also able to push and shove the Democratic Party in the socialist direction. Look at the way that poor, hapless Joe Biden, he used to be against, he used to be for guns, and now he's against them. And he used to have reservations about the Green New Deal, but now he's completely on board with its ambitious agenda. And he was against the idea of free college, and now he's for it. So he has been muscled into the socialist camp. And it's very clear who would be running things if Biden, if you had a Biden presidency. There would be a little army of ventriloquists and puppeteers telling him what to do.
Well, it's just been so scary to watch. And what's interesting is when you mention the two of the arms of force behind this are academia and Hollywood, it's interesting that people who live in $10 million gated mansions are somehow a voice for socialism. They would seem to be an imperfect messenger if we were living in a sane world.
The hypocrisy is stunning. I mean, these are people who live behind tall walls that say that walls don't work. And they want to disband the NRA, but they all have private security. And they all talk about their white privilege, but none of them are willing to actually give it up. I remember a few years ago, I was at Amherst College, and a student, white student, is pompously lecturing me about white privilege. And he says, well, I'm a beneficiary of white privilege. And I said, well, let's think about this. If you really think that, and I'm not telling you that, you're telling me that, then why don't you go to the registrar's office tomorrow morning and withdraw from Amherst and tell them to give your privileged position to a deserving minority? And he goes, oh, no, don't be ridiculous. And I go, I'm not being ridiculous. He goes, I see your point, Dinesh. You're trying to talk about general hypocrisy. I go, no, I'm not talking about general hypocrisy. I'm talking about your hypocrisy.
Because
all I'm asking you to do is to sort of put your actions behind your own conscience and carry out the logical implications of your own beliefs, and pompously you refuse to do that.
Yeah, no, they're about words and image building and what they can post on Instagram and not actually changing their life, for crying out loud. Hey, before I let you go, so the presidential election, you have a movie coming out this fall titled Trump Card. And we're talking about a man who's been so polarizing. I think, other than the coronavirus, the two things I care about the most are the economy and keeping our nation safe. And on those counts, I thought Trump was doing a fine job until this this pandemic hit. But what's your movie about, Dinesh? And what's your take on the race?
Typically, my films are a translation, if you will, of my books. In other words, they are an emotional and visual and narrative presentation of the arguments and ideas in the book. So a lot of the movie is about socialism, and the reason is that socialism is the end game. In other words, when you see people breaking windows and you see the deep state and you see all these shenanigans going on, you have to ask, Well, those are the means, but what is the end? What is the actual objective of these people? And the answer is to move America in a socialist direction. Now, the reason I focus on Trump is, number one, he is, of course, the colossus that is, I think, what the election will revolve around. It's going to be basically, are you for Trump or are you against him? Biden is a virtual non-entity at this point. But I think the second thing that's interesting is that Trump is not just the political soldier in the war against socialism, but he's also been, if you will, the classic entrepreneur. I mean, if you picked an embodiment of the American dream, somebody who sort of made it in his life before the presidency, Trump was an entrepreneur. So he's the opposite of a socialist. And in the movie, I actually look at some of Trump's early career to examine the question of what is it that entrepreneurs actually do. So it's an interesting, exciting, moving, powerful movie. We're actually going to be releasing it in September on video on demand because the theaters, there are just not enough theaters open.
Right.
So I had scheduled it for 1,000 theaters, but I just don't want it to be where we're in 100 theaters and 90% of people in the country can't see the movie.
I like it. No, it's going to be very interesting. We only have a few seconds, but right now the polls show Biden ahead. How do you think it's going to play out in November?
I'm actually very optimistic about Trump. I agree that he doesn't have the economy to count on anymore. But I think people have not gotten a close look at Biden. The Democrats have made a huge mistake in picking a guy who's basically not all there. And I think when the American people see it, they'll be like, gee, this really isn't a hard call.
Okay. We will watch with interest. Okay, so that's coming out in September, Trump Card, and then also Dinesh D'Souza's new book, The United States of Socialism. It's always great talking with you. It's been a while, and I'm glad we could catch up today.
Thank you very much.
All right, Dinesh D'Souza joining us. Let's hear your comments on everything you just heard. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. We'll check the news for you, and then we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.